We are still in the afterglow of the Easter experience. We had a great Easter set of services last week, and there is still that lingering expectation of what Jesus did on the cross, and even more importantly did when He got off of the cross and came out of the grave. And as we concluded the Easter services last Sunday, we finished with Jesus out of the grave. But as Jesus came out of the grave, His intention was to prove that He was alive. And over the next several days, over the next probably 40 days, as best could be tracked, Jesus kept appearing to people, proving that He did come back from the dead. And His intention in proving that He came back from the dead was to set the stage for the ministry of the church that you and I are the beneficiaries of today. And one of the key and more important players, if you will, or participants in the setting of the momentum of the New Testament church was Peter. Peter is the classic example of a person who has been called of God, used of Jesus, failed miserably, and then restored for greater purpose. All of us have experienced failure. All of us know what it's like to fail. Sometimes the failure is inconsequential, but it hurts just the same. I remember when I was in sixth grade in Houston, Texas, my dad played high school football, and it was my first year to be able to put on the shoulder pads and the helmet and get on a football team. We practiced. Our coach reminded me of Barney Fife. We practiced, and we were going to have the winning formula for our football season. And then we went out to play the first game. And it's like a HD movie in front of my face, in front of my memory. We lost that first game 62-7. And I remember so vividly getting in my dad's 1964 beige four-door Impala with no air conditioner and no radio, driving home crying because we lost that game so bad. And there was nothing that my father could say to me. I hated the car. I hated there was no air conditioner. I hated there was no radio. I didn't want to hear anything from him. It was a terrible day of failure. The truth of it is that failure was just inconsequential. I mean, people throw out the ball in sporting events, and sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. It taught me some valuable lessons, though, in this day and age of participation trophy, it's where everybody goes home with something, that there's a great value in learning lessons from failure and losing. Because when I was a sophomore in high school, a third string guard on my high school football team, not really much of a player, our high school team went on to win the state championship, and I relished in that win, remembering that failure the first time I played football. And it made me want to be better. It made me want to not feel that way again. But the truth of it is, competition in sports is inconsequential. You keep the score, you measure it, you go on to the next thing. It doesn't change world order or world peace. Sometimes failure, though, is consequential, if you will. We all could probably stand up and give testimony of times where we've been in school and we thought we knew the information. And we thought we'd given our best effort when the truth of it is we really hadn't. And we go to take the test and you open the first page of the test and that first question is just absolutely like a foreign language to you. And then the second question and the third question. And you ever been there? I know I have. And that panic just sinks in. And it becomes a guessing game, a game of chance where you just try your best to put something down, you write something down, and you hope against all hope that the teacher has grace. And when that grade comes back, that test comes back, it's just full of red. Just full of red. It's the worst thing you've ever seen in your life. And you know at the point of the marks of the red all over the page, it was your fault. It was your fault. It was my fault. I failed. The truth of it is, it passes. We've all endured bad grades. We've gotten over it. And we've gotten better as a result. And sometimes when you make that bad grade and the teacher says to you, you know, if you really put your mind to it, if you really put your energy to it, you can overcome this bad grade with a series of good grades and catch up and produce a passing score for the end of the semester. And sometimes failure is a good thing to motivate us to being more successful. There's that inconsequential failure that really doesn't make a difference. There's that consequential failure when you know you've done something wrong, you haven't put in the effort, and you bear the results. But then there is that ultimate failure, that failing of God. When you just decide that I'm going to do wrong because I want to, because I deserve it, because I don't think it'll be that big a deal. I'll probably get away with it. I'm just going to go ahead and fail. It's called sin. And determine in my heart and determine in my life that I'm just going to do the wrong thing and I'm going to enjoy it in the moment. The truth of it is that failure of conscious decision has much more dire consequences than a football game or a score on a test. Because God knows and God sees and we're not going to get away with and we're not going to hide from and it's going to be found out. Well, Peter went through some of that experience. Peter was found in the early part of Jesus' ministry. He was found fishing, minding his own business, taking care of his family, going out to sea, catching some fish, selling some fish, eating some, and enjoying the trade of fishing. And Jesus came to him one day by the sea and didn't have a lot of words to say to him except to say, "Peter, stop fishing," and he said, "Follow me." And the story is told in the scripture that Peter put down his nets and was compelled to follow Jesus. And there's a great inspiration there. Peter didn't need a lot of dialogue. He didn't need a lot of words. He just said, "Okay, Master, I'll follow you." And he left his trade. And for the next 3 years, he was on this grand adventure with Jesus. He was on this grand adventure doing all kinds of amazing things, watching all kinds of amazing things unfold in his life, being taught to preach, being taught to minister, being taught to perform the miraculous, even walking on water until he took his eyes off Jesus. He had an incredible journey with Jesus. In the course of Peter's calling and training as a disciple, Jesus came to him and said, "Peter, upon this rock I will build my church." Referring to himself as the rock, and Peter is the little rock who would be an instrumental component, an instrumental partner in helping the church of Jesus Christ be built that you and I are benefiting from even today. And he commissioned, he prophesied over Peter that Peter would be instrumental in bringing about the evangelism that was needed in order to infuse the New Testament church with life from the time of the cross and resurrection and ultimate ascension into heaven. And Peter, you would be the same way. Heard it, but it didn't quite sink in. How could it sink in? What do you mean by that? How does little old me, Peter, must have thought, who am I? I mean, I'm just hanging out with Jesus, doing a few things. Who am I that you're going to use me to usher in the modern New Testament church that we teach and believe in today? And so Peter continued in his ministry with Jesus. And then as the circumstances of the world turned up the heat on Jesus and the pressure was put on for him to be crucified, Jesus at the last came to Peter and said to him, "Peter, tonight, as I'm going to the most horrible moment of my life, you're going to deny me once, twice, three times. Peter says, oh, no, not me. I'm with you, Jesus. I mean, I pull out my sword. I'll go to the death for you. I'll be with you no matter what. If others leave you behind, but I'm going to be with you no matter what. And sure enough, when the pressure cooker was turned up, when the heat was turned on, when the chips were down, when Jesus was off being beaten and mocked and trials and on top of trials, Peter was in the darkness. I never knew him. And he failed Jesus. At Jesus' point of great need, at Jesus' point of great support and rallying and payback, if you will, for all that Jesus had done for Peter, Peter denied Jesus. You ever done anything really bad in your life? You don't need to nod your head. You ever done really anything really, really bad in your life? It couldn't be that bad. It couldn't be as bad as Peter looking at Jesus while Jesus is being ushered off to death, looking him in the eyes, as the scripture says, and says, I don't know that man. It couldn't be any worse than that. And so Peter went where Peter went. And Jesus went to the cross. Peter went to hide in the darkness of his failure. You can imagine and relate to Peter a little on that Easter Sunday morning when the news came from the women that the stone had been rolled away and the body of Jesus was no longer there. And Peter was one of the first ones to rush in. After all, he'd been living on 3 days of failure. And he rushed back to the tomb and he looked in and he saw that Jesus was not there and ultimately discovered not once, not twice, but a third time that Jesus was alive. And Peter began to relate to Jesus again and then possibly think, well, maybe I'm out of the woods with this rejection thing. Maybe he kind of forgot. Maybe in all of the activity of the resurrection, and you know, this is a big deal. Maybe we're not going to get to talk about that. You ever been in that place of failure? Where you just kind of talk yourself out of the trouble? Sure we have. Maybe it'll just pass. Maybe it'll just go on by. Maybe it won't be so bad after all. But then we pick up the story in the last chapter of the book of John. And after all of these events have unfolded, Peter one morning with his guys says, I'm going fishing. Read between the lines. I'm going back to doing what I used to do. Going back to what I know, all of this experience with Jesus has clearly disqualified me and my failure has kept me from being all that I could be. So I'm just going back to what I used to do. And Peter found himself fishing all day and all night, toiling and working. And if you've done any fishing at all, it's work to not catch fish. It's, you know, it's fun to catch fish, but it's work to not catch fish. And that's what they experienced all night long. In the morning, this guy calls from the shore and says, have you caught anything? They were a distance out. They couldn't tell who it was. No, we haven't. And so he said to them, well, cast your net on the other side of the boat. The boats weren't probably more than 20, 25 feet. What's the difference with this side of the water and this side of the water? It's the same water. If there's no fish here, there's no fish here. But you can clearly note that the fisherman was desperate. Fishermen that haven't caught any fish all day and all night are desperate to catch fish. And so they heeded the advice and they threw the net on the other side of the boat. And sure enough, when the net landed on the other side of the boat, the fish began to jump in, so many that they couldn't even carry it. And Peter said, there's only one person that could do something like that. And John said, that's the Lord. That's the Lord. And Peter, not even thinking about the fish anymore, jumped into the water and swam to the shore to see Jesus. You can just imagine Peter all night long on the boat, swimming in the water, coming up out of the water, and there he is, bedraggled, wet from head to toe, wore out from all night, breathing, you know, just absolutely a mess. And he was a mess on the outside, and Jesus could see that he was still a mess on the inside because the matter of his failure had not been resolved. It's curious to note, and when Peter got himself composed and got to Jesus, it's curious to note that Jesus had already made a fire and Jesus already had fish on the fire. There's a message there, by the way. The message is this: if Peter caught it or not, we don't know. But the message is this: Peter, I don't need fishermen. My Father created all these fish. If I command that fish to jump out of the water, come on shore, build its own fire and jump on the fire and cook itself so that you can have fish, I can do that. I don't need fishermen. What I need is what I needed when I called you at first. I need someone to be a fisher of men. I need someone to toil and work and labor and struggle and strain in order to be a fisher of men. And so became the restoration dialogue with Peter and Jesus. Not a Greek scholar by any means, but it's worth doing a little Greek study to understand what Jesus and Peter exchanged with one another when Jesus began to ask Peter that key question, "Peter, do you love me?" And you'll look through the rest of the chapter and you'll see that he asked it three times. Peter, do you love me? Peter, do you love me? Peter, do you love me? But the first time Jesus asked Peter, "Peter, do you love me?" In Greek, he said, "Peter, do you agape me? Do you deeply love me? Do you love me with the devotion that you had at the beginning? Do you love me with a sacrificial kind of love that you have experienced from me to you, Peter?" And Peter said, "Yes, Lord, you know I phileo you. You know I care deeply about you." So Jesus asked again, "Peter, do you agape me? Do you deeply love me? Do you have a commitment to me like I have a commitment to you?" Again, "Yes, Lord, you know that I care about you. You know I do." Third time he asked, "Peter, do you even phileo me?" He let him off the hook, and basically Peter said, "Yes, I care about you." Most think that that exchange of three times responding in love was an opportunity to cancel the three times of denial. And Jesus was intent on restoring Peter in order for him to be useful for ministry again. I imagine that Peter felt an incredible amount of guilt and an incredible amount of shame. But if we could read between the lines and conjecture on what Jesus was really trying to say in the moment with Peter, I think there are a couple of things that Peter would say in the context of what we were talking about. I think Peter would hear from Jesus, "Peter, when I called you from fishing to become a fisher of men, I meant that. And from my perspective, I have not changed in that original calling of you to come and follow me and accomplish my purposes through you. I meant that. I meant and desire for you to continue to be a fisher of men. Peter, when I told you that upon this rock I would build my church and you and I would be in a partnership to bring about thousands and thousands and millions of believers in Jesus Christ going forward from this time. I meant that. And I haven't changed my plan for you, Peter. I have intended for the beginning of time, before you were even born, before you were even created, to be a part of the building of the New Testament church in Jesus Christ. I went to Rice University in an orientation for my son the other day, and I sat on a little tram that runs around the campus to help commute from one end of the campus to the other. This grad student, who was smart as a whip, with a Baylor Medical and Texas Children's Hospital tag, he was there doing two different internships with the big hospitals across the street, and he was on the campus of Rice University. He was from China. He's 2 years from China. He had incredible English, having been from China for just a couple of years ago. And he sat down next to me. And I said, well, tell me a little bit about yourself and about the 3 minutes we had on the train. And he said, I'm doing these two graduate things. Boy, he was proud of those tags. He had two of them. He was smart as could be. He's probably going to cure cancer or something. I mean, he's one of them guys, you know. And he said, I'm in love in America. Hell, in 2 years. I said, man, you have great English for 2 years being here. He said, yeah, I was real proud of that. And then we talked just nonsense for back and forth for a minute, just chatting a minute. And then he said something that caught my ear. He said my church is hosting an event tonight. I said, what is the event? He said, God, Science, and the Resurrection. He said it's a talk by an author that to help scientific people understand how to believe in the resurrection. I said, you said my church. And then I wish I could have taken a snapshot of this. Young student from China, he just looked down and he looked off in his gaze. And he said, I got baptized 6 months ago. And he just kind of drifted off into the memory. Peter, I intended to build my church so that people from China coming to Rice University because they're smart would come onto this campus and get in a Bible study and come to know Jesus and be baptized and be an outstanding doctor that would cure all kinds of diseases and impact the world. I intended for that, and that hasn't changed. And by the way, Peter, I told you you'd fail me. I told you once, twice, three times you would fail me. It's not a surprise to me. I knew you would fail. And I told you so. But Peter, here's the other part of that. Because you failed, and because I am here today to see that you are restored, your failures can be the foundation of a thriving ministry. Your failed test will become your testimony and impact everything from here going forward. And this is just my imagination. It's not in Scripture, but I think it's worth considering. I think Jesus in some way was messaging to Peter. And Peter, as you were failing me, I was not discouraged at the cross. Instead, because of your failure, I was encouraged to stay on the cross. Because I love you so much that I wanted to make sure that you had an avenue, that you had a pathway back to God through the experience of the cross and the resurrection. It didn't disappoint me. It didn't even surprise me. It sustained me so that I might die for your sin and all the rest of the sins of the world yet to be and those that already come. It sustained me so that I could accomplish the purpose of God through the experience of the cross and the resurrection. Peter, do you love me? Do you even care about me? Can you even look me in the eye? Do you even like me? And Peter began to be healed. And if you look forward in the next book, you'll see that Peter was instrumental in bringing about a large matter of evangelism and conversion in the very first New Testament church, and that group of people, 3,000 strong, that were converted to Christ because of Peter's preaching, because out of his test, he now had a testimony, and Jesus had restored him. And that 3,000 strong met together and then scattered across the region because of persecution. And you and I, as believers in Jesus Christ, are beneficiaries of that event today. So what do we learn from Peter? When we look into our deep failures, maybe resolved, maybe unresolved, when we look into the sin places in our life that we wish would just go away and we haven't quite done, what do we learn from Jesus coming to meet Peter? Well, first of all, we learn that when we fail significantly, when we fail greatly, if you will, our tendency is to do the same thing that Peter did. Our tendency is to return to our past, to go back to where we used to be and erase all of the progress that we have made because we had at one time been close to Jesus. But note in the story that when we return to our past because of our failings, just like with Peter, Jesus will find you there. He will find you fishing again. He will find you on the shore by the sea. He will find you where you are because He agapes you, because He loves you deeply, and He doesn't stop loving you. He doesn't stop loving me just because we failed. And when we find Jesus pursuing us again out of our failure with an effort and intention of seeking to overcome that failure in our life so that we will move from being tested and failing to having a testimony as a result, we are surprised at the response of Jesus. Out of our failure, we are surprised that Jesus even meets us at all. We are further surprised that Jesus does the miraculous. So it would be a small miracle that Jesus had already built a fire and caught some fish. And that's not the miracle that is the miracle. The miracle is the matter of restoration. The miracle is the matter of forgiveness. Went to Casting Crowns Thursday night and had some good time. Mark Hall is the head of Casting Crowns, and he said that he wrote the song that casting our sin as far as the east is from the west. He said it took him 7 years to write it. It took him 7 years to meditate on this matter of God forgiving and forgetting our sin from one hand to the other of the cross. That's how far the east is from the west in his interpretation of the cross. And so Jesus finds us where we were. And the response is surprising because He does the miraculous and He casts our sin as far as the east is from the west. And He gives us the opportunity to agape Him today, to love Him again today, to love Him again today. And when we are taken from our failure through restoration and a ministry, Jesus gives us ministry assignments once again. He empowers us in a new way, in a new understanding, and in a new comprehension of the restoration of Jesus. Peter's result was that he preached to thousands. He initiated the church into existence in the power of the Holy Spirit and under the teaching and direction of Jesus Christ. So here's the question for us. What is the purpose of Jesus that He is seeking to restore you for? What is your purpose that Jesus has for you? When He met you by the sea and He called you to Himself and He gave you a purpose and He gave you a ministry, all of us can confess we've derailed that purpose from time to time. But what is the purpose of your life as Jesus intended from here? Do you love Jesus enough to follow after your purpose, even when we fail?